We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from five-star app Meditation Studio and Muse, the brain-sensing headband that gives you feedback on your meditation practice. I'm Patricia Karpus, co-founder of Meditation Studio and your host on Untangle, along with my co-host, Muse founder, Ariel Garten. Many of us spend hours in the gym, or at mindfulness retreats, or reading books on personal growth, working on getting stronger physically and emotionally. But when it comes to working on our relationships, we hope that our feelings about our romantic partner will magically freeze in that exciting and cozy cocoon of the first month, 6 months, or even year we're together. I'm told this is indeed magical thinking. This week's guest, Suzanne Pilecki-Pawelski, shares insights from the book she co-authored with her husband, James, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania and co-founder, along with Martin Seligman, of the first Master of Applied Positive Psychology program. The book is called Happy Together, Using the Science of Positive Psychology to Build Love That Lasts. In fact, it's a mystery to me why we don't learn relationship skills in school when we're much, much younger. Some of us were lucky enough to have good role models, but not all of us. Instead, we learn by trial and error. Awareness of our own habits or patterns, plus the willingness to develop new skills with a growth mindset help a lot. Sometimes what was charming when you first met someone becomes annoying 10 years later. Lots to think about, and Suzanne is great at putting a lens on how happiness and relationships are connected. And she says we're not talking about the jump up and down kind of happiness, though that is nice. We're talking about a sense of serenity and gratitude that come as love deepens over time. Research shows that this is what couples with long-lasting relationships have cultivated. Here we go. Meet Suzanne. Suzanne, it's great to have you on Untangle today. Thank you so much for being with us.
I'm so excited to be here today. Thank you for the opportunity.
One of the biggest challenges we hear about, and I think we all share, is how to stay happy together in relationship. Will you tell me a little bit about why you chose to write this book called Happy Together?
I think that in our culture, there's so much focus on getting together, on the engagement, on the wedding, rather than being together and how to stay happy together. And a wedding, of course, is a very magical moment, but what are all the days that comes after? What are those skills and things we can do for our relationship? And I felt like nobody really talked about that. Also, there's so much focus on individual well-being, which, of course, it's really important to work on ourselves. But if we're only working on ourselves and not working on our interactions with other people, especially our romantic relationships, that doesn't really bode well.
One of the things I always think about is we learn so much in school as we're growing up, but we never really learn relationship skills, how to be in relationship, unless we've, of course, modeled them from our parents or from some other people in our lives. But I think that that's rare, unfortunately. So how do we get these skills? And what does the research or the science tell us about why it's so important for us to have these skills?
So absolutely. I mean, the habits that we practice tend to be from our parents or our primary caregivers. And right. That could be good or bad, depending on what kind of role models we had. And I think the good news is awareness. As long as we're aware of these habits, and I think often we're not. So we can pick up good habits from our primary caregivers, which is wonderful, or not so good habits. So I think awareness is the first key, knowing what we are doing and what we can do differently. The science of positive psychology, fortunately, can help demystify a lot of these things we think about relationships. And there's robust research on skills that we could practice on a daily basis to create healthy habits, to build stronger relationships in our lives.
And what does the science tell us about creating these habits and the kinds of practices we need to actually create that awareness first and then to build a new habit?
Well, we can always create new neural pathways. We didn't know this years ago. This is something more relatively new, I should say, that researchers thought many years back that there was a certain point that whatever we learned, that was it, right? When we're growing up, maybe kids, okay, we can shape our habits. But the good news is we can shape our habits throughout our lives. The more we practice doing things differently, it becomes more natural and we create those pathways. So whether you're 17 or 70, there's always hope to create better ways to interact with our loved ones.
Well, you talk about like 17 versus 70. Do you think it's harder for older people who are maybe getting into their second or even third relationships to make changes? Or do you still feel like this is possible with some of the tools that we're going to talk about in a few minutes?
I think it's possible for anyone. I think sometimes we learn from our past experiences and our past failures. I've talked to many couples over the years that maybe they didn't get it right the first time around. And it was only looking back and becoming aware of those things that they did that didn't work out and wanting to do something differently the next time. I think as long as we have the willingness to look at ourselves and really look at ourselves, not point fingers. What am I doing to contribute to the relationship? And how could I make healthier habits for myself and for my partner that I don't think age really matters?
You just tapped into something that I think about quite often. We were doing a little bit of research about relationships, and I had asked a few therapists that we were interviewing what the number one quality they think it takes for relationships once they've kind of become a little bit problematic, but what is the number one thing that dictates whether they'll be able to make it or not? And universally, they all said a willingness to work on things, which I found to be so interesting because a lot of what you talk about in your book is the willingness plus the awareness plus the skill set.
Definitely. I think it all starts with awareness because when we're trying to make changes in any aspect of our life, if we're not aware of what we're doing at the moment and we keep on repeating that, you know, that funny line we've all heard that insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And I think many times in relationships, that's what happens to people. And unfortunately, this lack of awareness, they think just by starting another relationship with a different person, it's going to be better. And they find themselves in a rut and going down the same pathway until there's an awareness and a willingness to really look deep inside ourselves.
Well, how do people get to this awareness? So let's say they're not like you and your husband who have written books and studied, or how does one become more aware of habits if they start off not being aware?
I think, first of all, asking questions of yourself, really taking time to reflect individually and say, what am I doing that is working well? What is something else I can do? What's one small thing I can do that would have a positive impact on my relationship? And asking your partner's questions. I feel that in the beginning of a relationship, especially when we first meet someone, the dating, the honeymoon phase, we're so curious. We ask questions, we marathon phone calls. And then once that honeymoon phase dies down, as it does in all relationships, that's normal. The problem is we stop being curious. We think we know our partner. And that's where I think the lack of awareness sets in. If I think I know everything there is about my partner, then how does it really allow the relationship to evolve and change?
I think that's so interesting that you say that because I think a lot of people love the feeling of falling in love. And then they get so frustrated when this idea, someone mentioned this to me the other day, you know, the difference between falling in love versus standing in love. How do you apply some of the principles of positive psychology, which I know is the foundation of your thinking? How do you apply some of those skills to that transition from falling versus standing in love?
I think one of the most important things to do is to really identify and reflect on your strengths and your partner's strengths. So yes, in the beginning, we may fall in love and be enamored, let's say, by our partner's, I'll use a personal example. My husband's a philosopher and an academic, being 100% transparent here, and he really loves to learn. And when I first met him, I'm like, wow, he has more books than anyone I know. Like, I thought I owned a lot of books and I loved this quality about him, his deliberate thinking and analytical mind.
Right.
Years later into the relationship, let's say we're making a decision about something, the same love of learning, analytical mind, I sometimes would forget about. And I'd be like, can you just make a decision? Why are you trying to annoy me? I didn't necessarily say that, but I may have thought it and thinking he was deliberately trying to frustrate me. And I think many of us are enamored, let's say, by these differences. But years later into the relationship, we sometimes see them as annoying deficits. So we're not excited by the differences anymore. And I think we need to look back and say, what are those strengths? And understand our partner, why he or she is behaving in the way she is, and looking through a positive lens. And just because they're different from you, that doesn't mean they're doing something wrong.
You bring up a really interesting point. I mean, people do stop being curious because once you get to know someone deeply, and this happens in our friendships too, we think we understand people fully. Then there is this part of what we say to someone in relationship versus what we think. And in mindfulness training, you learn to pause before you react to something so that you can respond more thoughtfully. What do you think about what to say and how to say something versus believing everything that you're thinking, which can often become very judgmental?
Yeah, I think that's terrific to think about. Many of us react based on our past experiences and our thoughts. As you mentioned, thinking about what we're going to say next instead of starting with a blank slate and really focusing our attention on our partner, actively listening to what he or she is saying, asking questions if we don't understand rather than jumping to conclusions.
Do you have some practices that you employ and even in your own relationship where you can help people to cross that bridge when they're feeling like angry? Like you were saying with your husband, sometimes you feel like his lack of quick decision-making might annoy you or something. What do you do in that moment?
I think being inquisitive, I think pausing, like you said, and reminding myself of what his strengths are. So focus the attention on him, not how I would respond, because I am very quick with more spontaneous. So again, getting out of ourselves, detaching from our thoughts and focusing our attention on the other person and to what he or she is saying, noticing too, not just the words they're using, but looking at their face, their gesture. They may be saying one thing, but expressing something different. And I think asking questions, being inquisitive and digging deeper than just what appears on the surface, because sometimes we shut down the interaction by just assuming and what we think in our mind he or she is saying, and it just reduces these conversations maybe to transactions rather than deeper, more intimate interactions, which are possible.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point. So then what is it about positive psychology as it relates to relationships that makes us happier human beings?
So the science of positive psychology studies what is going right with ourselves in the world and how we can grow those things. It's dubbed the science of strengths. So how much better and more fun too is it to focus on those aspects of ourselves, our partner and our relationship that's working? I mean, even in the direst of times, if you think nothing's going well and your relationship's having a lot of problems, you really pause and reflect. and you're mindful about it, there's probably some moments, hopefully, some nuggets of goodness that if you focused on, you could really grow. So it's starting there, looking for the good qualities and talking about them, growing them, reflecting upon them, rather than picking out the problems. Because we know from research, what we focus on becomes stronger.
And do we know scientifically that relationships make us happier? Or I'm guessing from this conversation, some relationships make us more miserable and some relationships make us happier. But from the science and from the research, can you say, do relationships make us happier overall?
Definitely. So positive psychology. So Marty Seligman, the founder of the field, who we are delighted to work with at Penn and actually wrote the foreword to this book, his theory of well-being, he has a PERMA model with P being for positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning, and achievement. Relationships is at the cornerstone. It's actually in the center of his model. And the research shows that relationships are the single most factor to our well-being, our close connections with other people. And of these relationships, you can only imagine our committed romantic relationships may be the most important. It's probably the person we're spending the most time with.
And does that mean that primary relationship in your life has the power to make you happy or unhappy?
Yeah, or miserable. Yeah. I do want to say something. Of course, if you're in an unhealthy relationship, something that is damaging and you're at fear of physical or psychological abuse, we are not recommending you stay in that. You need to end those relationships and get help. What we talk about in the book are relationships generally where a lot of people are experiencing the typical everyday annoyances. You don't see much romance anymore and you're getting frustrated. So just want to make that disclaimer for
some
relationships you need to leave for the health of yourself and of your family. But for your everyday relationships, definitely the quality of our relationships. The research shows people in healthier relationships are happier. They enjoy better physical health, more successful at work.
Interesting. So what?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety or just need to recharge your batteries so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great. And this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit BetterHelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now back to our show.
Kind of love, and you talk about this in the book, is actually sustainable. And let's say for people that are getting into relationships or looking for relationships, and I think you talk about there are three primary types. Is it useful? Is it pleasurable? Is it good? Will you talk about your theories on this?
Sure. So we incorporate philosophy into the book, of course, because one of us is a philosopher. I think you can guess which one. And we found it really intriguing because Aristotle, who studied, talked about the good life, said there are three things in life that humans really love: the useful, as you mentioned, the pleasurable, and the good. And there's three levels of friendship that corresponds to that. And actually, when James and I were on our honeymoon, I said, we were discussing Aristotle, of course, because isn't that what you discuss on your honeymoon? True story. So I said, well, why did Aristotle have to limit this to friendship? What if we took this up a notch and we applied it to our marriage? And hopefully we have some pleasure in it. And usefulness, of course, we bring different skills and talents to the relationship. But what if we really focused on the goodness? And he said, I love that idea. Because relationships solely based on pleasure, as you can imagine, I think a lot of them are highlighted in pop culture today. It's the hot and heavy passion. It feels great in the moment, but it also sizzles out quickly, if that's all there is. And similarly, relationships of usefulness. I think this equated kind of with the old-fashioned sense of, I have a dairy, you have land, we'll get together, that sort of situation. And again, we're not judging any of these kind of relationships, but if that's all there is in the relationship, it's not as sustainable. However, relationships build on goodness or character, as Aristotle spoke about in the Nicomachean Ethics, are the most sustainable. Because unless the person's character changes completely and he suddenly or she suddenly turns into a completely different, horrendous person, you're going to love that goodness and you can really grow that and become better individually and better together as a couple.
This sounds like a good place to define happiness, because quite often people become addicted to pleasure, whether it's sexual pleasure or some other kind of pleasure. You want that adrenaline rush, and it's very hard to look at things that are sustainable and copacetic as a way of being happy. Can you talk a little bit about how you're defining happiness?
Sure. Yes. And it's not limited just to the pleasure. Hopefully, I mean, of course you want some pleasure and passion in your relationship, but that's not the foundation. Mm-hmm. We talk about character, seeing good character. So really noticing the goodness in your partner. What are his or her strengths? And how can you help grow that good? How can you help your partner achieve his or her goals? Not you telling him or her how to change and how to be, but noticing the goodness, helping support him or her in that goodness. And together, you grow as individuals and you grow as a team. So we talk about good character.
As a part of that, you talk about strategies for cultivating harmonious passion. So how does that play into the good character? It's like good character is the foundation and then you build upon that.
A lot of people in the beginning of a relationship, we talked about, we have a lot on passion that we talk about. There's really two types of passion, according to positive psychology research. You have something called an obsessive passion. That's, I can't live without you. You think about your partner all times of the day, and maybe you're giving up your hobbies. You're no longer seeing your friends because all you want to do is see your loved one. We may feel that way in the beginning of a relationship. And of course, that's normal. But if months or years into the relationship, we still feel that way, it's actually a sign that we're probably more obsessed with our partner than really cultivating a mature love. So to cultivate a healthier, harmonious passion, you have to remember yourself and reflect upon yourself. What are those strengths? What are those activities that you enjoy doing before you met your partner? Who are those people you like spending time with? Are you still seeing those friends? Or are you really giving up yourself and a lot of your extracurricular activities to focus 100% on your partner?
How do you practice positive psychology and positive emotions when someone has gone through a full cycle of having been together for a while and then they're feeling stuck and disconnected?
There's many different things you can do. One thing that's actually really fun, and we've spoken to couples throughout the world giving romance and research workshops, we have people identify their strengths. The VIA Character Institute, which is just a wonderful nonprofit, has a free test you can take if you go to VIA Character. It's also on our website. But anyhow, in about a short 10, 15 minutes, you can find out what your top strengths are, dubbed your signature strengths. Maybe it's love of learning, or you're very grateful, or just incredibly kind, or a leader. These are intrinsic qualities, not skills or perfect pitch, but it's just mm-hmm. what makes us us. So once you find out your strengths and your partner finds out their strengths, we suggest people go on a strengths date. So a personal example I can share from our life. So one of my top strengths is zest. You may be able to tell I have a lot of energy. And my husband's, as I mentioned, is love of learning. So we live in the historical part of Philadelphia and busy schedules. We hadn't really checked out of all the history there is. And we thought, well, with these two strengths, what can we do? And we thought, with James's love of learning and with my zest, what if we rented Segways and we did a historical tour? And we did it. And Patricia, we had a blast. I mean, I was
that does sound like fun.
I was zooming around. I was paying attention a bit, but I was just having fun going really fast up and down the hills, and my husband's thoughtfully stopping in front of every building with the guide, listening to the details on the architecture and so forth. But there's so many different kinds of dates you can imagine, whatever your strengths are. So that's one activity we suggest for couples, and we've gotten really good feedback from people.
Yeah, I love that, because you both, and especially the example you just gave where you both got to just, you were having a lot of fun and he was actually maybe having fun too, but he got to share each of your, of the things that you both love to do. So that's very cool.
I was just going to preface it, or I guess afterwards, because I think a lot of people say, well, we take turns and one weekend we might go, let's say, hear jazz, but my partner doesn't really like it. So he begrudgingly goes along. The following weekend, I accompany him, let's say, to a sporting game. I don't really like that either. So of course you need a compromise in a relationship, but I feel that if that's all you're doing and one person is doing something he or she would rather not do, how much better would it be to do something where you're intrinsically motivated, you're bringing your authentic self to the date, and you're both having a good time instead of taking turns at enjoyment?
Well, yeah, that sort of assumes that you have a lot of things in common that you enjoy doing. And is that characteristic of people in longer term relationships, or do you see that they start developing their own interests and doing a lot of things independently, or does it depend on the individual?
Well, I think the thing with strengths dates, when you're looking at strengths, it doesn't matter as much, because you could think of most situations, if you're focusing on your strength, you could do something that you normally might not think you're interested in and have a good time. So I can give you another example. One of us loves to go out to dinner and trying different cuisines. The other person, not so much. But what if we were trying out a different cuisine and in advance, we researched the country and really looked into the history behind the food. And we printed out information and we discussed it during the dinner. And we had an enjoyable dinner and an intellectual conversation. That's very different than just going out to eat and have some drinks.
Because of your partner's love of learning, you can sort of twist it around to make it so that you can both enjoy it. I like it.
Exactly.
So, I like it very much. And you talk about these practices, and I'd love for you to dig a little bit deeper into them. You talk about mindfulness and the power of gratitude. And then you also talk about some kindness practices that are intended to make us happier. Could you share a little bit about each of these?
I think there's so much focus on gratitude, which is great. However, there hasn't been as much focus on how you express gratitude. So the research shows it's not just about feeling grateful, but it's expressing that gratefulness to our partner, right? Yes. I may feel really grateful for my partner, but if I'm not telling him, he's not a mind reader, right? It's not just whether I express it, but how I do it. So if I'm given a gift and I just focus on the benefit to myself, it's okay. It's not bad. It's better than not thanking him at all. But how much better is it if I focus on his specific actions that led to that gift, his strengths and thoughtfulness, and focus the attention on him rather just on myself?
And we'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
Is that an example, for example, if you don't like the gift, don't focus on the gift, but rather focus on the kindness and thoughtfulness and intention behind it. Gotcha. That's a good example of positive psychology, because there's not a couple that I know that either the man or the woman hasn't had a problem with the gift or lack of gift giving of their partner. So I think that's a really interesting one to see the bigger picture. I think that's a really interesting one.
Definitely. And then receiving gratitude. We talk a lot about the importance of receiving gratitude. And we found, Patricia, speaking throughout the world, it's something that all of us really seem to have a tough time doing, accepting compliments and receiving praise from others. For some reason, a lot of us just deflect it or shut it down.
That's a good point too. And what about like mindfulness and kindness practices that you would recommend?
So we had the opportunity, being based in Philadelphia, to study with Dr. Michael Baim at Penn. So James and I took an 8-week course, and we realized not everyone can do that. But I know through your app, there's opportunities wherever you live in the world, you can take mindfulness, which I think is great. And for us and our relationship, we both got something different out of it, and it deepened our connection. James felt that it made him, the expression he used, it sort of cleared his rear view mirror and he could see things better. Mm. And for me, it slowed me down, which was good when I was listening to him. And we were doing it like 40 minutes a day. I realized that's not always possible, but we know from research doing it even just a few minutes a day, taking time to do 20 breaths in your seat, especially before going into a meeting or maybe having a really sensitive, important conversation with your partner, it really slows down our thinking. We become more compassionate with ourselves and with others in our life.
Do you have like sort of a general rule about kindness? So many people get angry. They say things they regret. You hear these stories even at end of life. And is there a tool or some way of thinking that reminds you constantly that kindness rules, but certainly not at the expense of really heartfelt and important communication? But how do we balance those two?
I mean, the research shows in positive psychology that acts of kindness really impacts our lives and other people's lives. So there's been famous studies from Sonia Lubomirsky, for example, about carrying out 5 new acts of kindness one day per week. You could do that over the course of 6 weeks and really seeing the impact in your life and of your partner. Mm-hmm. And just on a simpler level, I mean, just think about the role of kindness in your relationship. And how could you use the strength of kindness to really support your partner? Asking questions, what's he trying to achieve? And how can you be kind? But it's just, it doesn't have to be this grandiose expression, but just something really simple, whether it's helping around the house or doing a chore or saying a kind word if you know he or she is having a particularly tough day, or just reassuring them. I think it goes a really long way.
Yeah. I mean, we talk a lot on our podcast about self-compassion and mindfulness of your own habits and behaviors. And what I really like about what we're doing here is that we're talking about taking our ego out of the equation and thinking first of the other person in terms of having that impact our overall happiness. And when we obsess on our own thinking or feelings, we may be really quick to respond in ways that we would prefer we didn't.
I think leading with kindness at all times, and of course, disagreements, arguments are a natural part of relationships, but I think you could still be kind. You don't need to attack. A lot of behavior that is unhealthy, it's because, as you mentioned, it's focused on the ego. So instead of really listening to our partner, we're being defensive, ego self-protection, and we might be attacking instead of listening. And I think arguments actually open up a whole new area of potential growth. If you're listening, maintaining curiosity, asking questions, and again, focusing on the other person, not on yourself. There are opportunities to change and grow together if you're being kind.
Yeah. So what is the one piece of advice you would like people to remember or you'd like to give to us about being happy in relationship?
I think not waiting around for happiness to happen, but to work at it. You use the notion of a, or the metaphor, I should say, of the relationship gym. Just like you don't buy a membership and go to the gym once and think you're going to be stronger, more flexible. We think the same about relationships. just because you met someone, maybe committed, maybe got married, you can't just sit back. You got to work on your relational muscles. So I think simply, I would say, thinking about something you can do, just a small change or a healthy habit that you can do on a daily basis, that's going to positively impact your relationship.
That's a great one. And you say in the book, in every other area of our lives, whether we're building our career or we're learning an instrument or we're learning a new language, we put in the work and then we see the results of our work or our practice, but we don't think of our relationships this way. So I think that's a really, really great piece of advice.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if people told us that growing up?
I know.
Fairy tales and films, especially with young women, often it's like, oh, don't worry, you'll meet someone. Princess Charming will just come around and whip you off your feet. And it's a nice idea, but I think it's really dangerous because even when you often do feel that way and meet someone, you're not often taught that you still got to work at it. Like, then what? You're just sitting back and coasting? Like, what happens? Say when the storybook, the fairy tale ends, like what happens the follow-up? Nobody
exactly
talks about it.
You have to buy new shoes if you're Cinderella. It's really important. And it's not just that we have to work at it, but it's how we have to work at it. And I just find that most people, they just don't know necessarily. Some people are lucky and they do their work. Why is it so hard for us to be happy?
In addition to focusing on our partner's weaknesses, as I mentioned, we see them as deficits often, instead of looking at their strengths, we also try to force ourselves to be happy. And we may force our partners to be happy instead of prioritizing activities that lead to happiness. So in positive psychology, they talk about prioritizing positivity. This is really groundbreaking research. Simply, it means looking at your day and scheduling those activities that bring enjoyment. And it's really interesting because when we talked to couples who did seem really happy together and had long-lasting, satisfying relationships, they were the couples who planned activities into their day and throughout their years. And that's what led to the positive emotions, rather than just sitting around waiting for those high arousal positive emotions to happen. Those emotions don't occur at the same level of frequency and intensity as the beginning of a relationship, of course. There's things we can do, but if that's all we're focusing on, our high arousal emotions, that doesn't bode well for a relationship. Instead, we want to focus on building a whole range of positive emotions like gratitude that we talked about, and kindness and serenity, by doing activities that evoke those feelings in ourselves and in our partner.
And does that lead to what you talk about as healthy passion? Is that what you're aiming for? Because you're adding more and more of those moments that you can savor together into your lives.
Definitely. Because some people say, well, I want more passion in my relationship. What they misunderstand is often it's the wrong kind of passion. So obsessive passion has the highs, but also has the lows. Whereas a healthier passion there's a range of emotions that we experience in our lives. It's not just the stereotypical jumping up and down for joy, happiness that's sometimes stereotyped and puts a bad name on happiness. But like I mentioned, there's the more subtle emotions like serenity and gratitude. And these are qualities that develop usually in healthier, more mature relationships.
I am so grateful that you were here today to share all of this great wisdom with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I had a really fun time.
Thanks so much to Suzanne for being with us today. You can pick up a copy of her book, Happy Together, at all major booksellers, and check out her website at suzannepalegi.com. A reminder for all, our Veterans Collection of Meditations on Meditation Studio is now free for everyone. So please share them widely where you think they'll help. As always, if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at founders@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store and check out Muse at choosemuse.com. We'll see you next time.